you touch a key, and it just completely hard freezes the system.
Nice.
I'm hijacked.
Ding, 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 ding. We got a winner.
It only does this when it starts up.
Never turn the computer off then.
You can trust no one, especially people that you think you can trust, except for us. Right. You can trust us.
We want others to learn from your pain.
Let me tell you what my dilemma is.
Let's do that.
Does your computer bite? Has your hard drive gone floppy? It's time to call the Computer Corner on News Talk 92.3 KTAR. Now in the Computer Corner, here are the Data Doctors.
And in fact, it is the Data Doctors here in the Computer Corner. Thanks for joining us once again as we talk about computers and technology. And maybe we'll throw some politics in there. No, we won't. You'll have to listen to the rest of the KTAR lineup for that. But we are here to talk tech with you as we are every Saturday afternoon for two solid, beautiful hours. We're here to answer questions. We're here to teach you a little something new, some new terms, give you some ideas about what you can do. What's that?
So we're here to eat some sushi.
We are here to eat some sushi. My son, Taylor, of course.
The food.
The primary training to be a data doctor is eating.
You know.
Right? There's caffeine, there's sugar, and then there's just...
food.
Yeah, any kind of mass consumption. So, being that this is the noontime hour, we try to sneak a little something in for sustenance throughout the
aroma
show.
Is amazing.
We try very... unfortunately, radio has not aspired to scratch and sniff, so those out there listening
shame.
Don't get to... But we will do our best to try to separate the ingestion of food from the actual show.
I don't know. It's going to be pretty tough.
Get a little messy if we don't do it. You know what I mean?
It is taking all of my willpower not to devour
all right.
food in front
okay.
of me.
Well, this is a life lesson, my man. Okay, so we're here to talk about technology in general, but we always bring a little theme in tow so we can try to concentrate on something specifically that might provide you with an extra bit of knowledge. And you know, we're here to have fun. And if we happen to teach you something, we do apologize. We do. Certainly not our intent. Our intent is just to have a good time, and everything else is just a bonus, if you will. We're going to talk today about something. We had a listener write in and ask a question about the paperless office. And I thought, you know, I haven't really addressed this in so long. It's time to come back around and talk about this. You know, after, what, 12, 13 years, however long we've been doing it. I think you're into
the 14th, right?
Somewhere in there of doing radio here on KTAR, it seems like I've really talked about everything at least once, sometimes many, many times. But this is a subject we haven't talked about for a while. And if you look at the resources we have posted at datadoctors.com/radio, you'll notice the title of the show is not about the paperless office. It's about the less paper office.
It's very intriguing. I'm wondering what that is.
Which part?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, Taylor, you can tell the fine folks that are listening out there why there is a significant barrier to a true paperless office.
See, a paperless office, there's no toilet paper. And you need toilet paper everywhere.
There you have
Ba-dum-bum.
It.
I like
well,
that.
Except for in Japan where they have those...
car toilets. Washes?
Yeah, butt washes, whatever. You know.
Jeez. Nice. I love it.
Here you go. Your mom's keeping score here. So... And if you look at any business out there, the thought of actually having zero paper, like paperless, truly paperless,
mm-hmm.
give me a break.
It's very difficult, yes.
We're not even. Now, the less paper office, and of course, this whole green thing that's going on, we want to save trees, let's talk about some stuff today that people can do that will generate less paper, kill fewer trees. And as a user, saves you money in paper, ink, aggravation?
Well, so, I don't know about aggravation.
Well, that's true. We are talking about computers.
Right.
So join us online again, datadoctors.com/radio. You'll see all of the resources, including tips for you if you're a business, if you're a home office user, whatever it is. Various tips, because it means different things to different people. And we're going to go through some of the real simple things you can do. Some of them you're probably already doing. I mean, take for example, digital photography. How has that changed the way that we consume paper when it comes to photographs?
What was dramatically.
Old school, right?
Right.
Every picture you take, you go down and get it developed. Somebody puts it on a piece of paper. Then you have one copy of that, and then you have the negatives that you always lose.
Right.
Or like the Polaroid, whatever.
Polaroid's even worse, right?
Yes, yeah, that's pretty much.
Those were awesome.
So, but there was a very one-to-one correlation in consumption between the picture you took and the film and mm-hmm. the paper to develop it and all that good stuff.
Very true.
Today... the digital camera, it's a double-edged sword.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no film, people take pictures with reckless abandon.
That is for sure.
And if they like to print those, because let's face it, we are pretty well endeared to paper as humans. It's pretty well entrenched in our way of thinking and our culture and what have you. So if you were to print everything that you took with your digital camera, you're actually using more paper. If you print out a picture to send in the mail to somebody this picture, that's one of the areas clearly with the digital camera you can start to save some trees,
mm-hmm.
because you can send it to them electronically. You can share your pictures electronically, right? So instead of sitting around with a photo album or whatever, you put them up on one of these free websites. There's a whole bunch of them out there. Shutterfly. There's Kodak's got their own. HP.
Yeah, there's Photobucket.
Yeah, and just about there's 500 different places, and it doesn't matter which one you go with. That becomes the place where A, you share the photos without killing trees. B, bonus, ding ding ding. You automatically create a backup of these photographs. They're no longer just on your home computer. And I can tell you from being in the data recovery business for as long as we have been, the digital camera has dramatically changed who we see as customers in our data recovery lab. It used to be almost exclusively businesses.
Sure.
Now we're seeing a lot of residential customers, and it's primarily because they have 4 or 5 years worth of digital photography that they never backed up on that hard drive. So now suddenly the expense, because it can get into the thousands of dollars to recover from a really severely crashed mechanical failure, but it's worth it because you can't replicate those. So again, it's digital, and that's one of the lessons about going less paper or paperless.
Mm-hmm.
In the old way, the paper was kind of your backup. So if you lost your digital version of your bookkeeping or whatever, you had printouts and what have you, and you could go back and try to replicate things. So if you get rid of the paper, you better make darn sure your backup system is very good.
True.
With good redundancy. So there's a whole lot of parts to this besides just saving trees, which is a great thing.
Very true.
But the functionality, how you, if you've got a large company, if it's just you, you figure out how you want to file things electronically, great. You get two people together. I've never seen two people that file their Word documents in the My Documents section the same.
Yeah.
Everybody does it different. Well, think about that for a second. That poses quite a bit of a problem in a quote-unquote paperless office.
Sure.
Unless there's a standard set. So we're going to talk in detail about all those things. While you're at our website, click on the newsletter section, and you can see what we send out absolutely free of charge every week prior to the show to people like Charles, who very graciously wrote, said just a comment and thanks. First, went to your newsletter because a tech at my local data doctors told me about something I should look at there. I liked what you did, so I subscribed. Now I'm hooked.
Perfect.
See, this is, we put caffeine in the newsletter, right?
Straight IV, right?
Right.
There.
And read you thoroughly, and even though I thought I was a rather advanced computer user, I learn a great deal. I try to catch most of your Saturday broadcasts, too. Thanks so much for the good work, Charles. Charlie. That right there makes it all worthwhile.
Most certainly.
It does.
Because
We can quit.
I spend an enormous amount of time trying to come up with the items. Again, having done this for so long, it's like, no, I've already talked about that.
Right.
No, that's old news. No, I try to find some new stuff every week. So it's really great when we hear back from folks like Charles. So take a look at the newsletter if you'd like it. It's absolutely free. If you don't want to subscribe, just come and visit our website once a week, and the archives are all there. So you can download them yourself if you, you know, RSS if you're one of those people. I mean, we've got it all.
Very true.
You can do all those things, so check that out. While you're there, you can look at the radio show section and see all of the resources down towards the bottom where it says this week's links. This week's links for all the resources. So, and with that, break here. We lots more to talk about, and a pretty cool special guest coming in at the bottom of the hour. I'll tell you about the next break. But for now, let's take a break and see what's going on out in the world of traffic and weather with John Dorham. Is it John? Welcome back to the Computer Corner, where we're discussing the less paper office, not the paperless office, but the less paper office, because that's really what's available. By the way, you can call in with your questions, comments. Love to hear from anybody that's actually adopted some paper-saving techniques at their home or their office. 602-277-5827, 602-277-KTAR. We want to hear from people. It's users helping users. Somebody out there that's driving around or whatever has done something that's made a significant difference, saved them money. Here's a good example. A lot of companies create brochures or very large documents mm-hmm. that they distribute to either inner office or to customers, that type of thing. Consider creating CD-ROM versions of a brochure, okay, which can be a little more interactive.
Mm-hmm.
Significantly cheaper, especially if it's a large number of pages. Super easy to change, right?
Very true.
And redistribute. And, I mean, there's so many benefits to going electronic for a lot of that kind of documentation. At the end of the day, we're still very entrenched in paper. So there are certain things where it's just not going to happen.
Right.
But start to look in those areas where you think there might be some savings. And at the after the bottom of the hour news break, got a guest that's going to be on. If any of you are viewers of the Mojo channel, not one of the high-def channels on the Cox channel, or
what?
Cox Network.
Somebody
from one of the reality shows is going to be on because they have a very, very interesting product
mm-hmm.
for those of you that really want to cut down a lot of paper that comes in through snail mail.
Interesting.
Very, very
interesting. I was not aware of this. No one told me Mojo guest.
Yes. But on the phone.
Oh.
Anyway.
Taylor's not in the loop.
<He's> like,
you got left out on the loop. That's not right.
He wakes up on Saturday going, show radio. Oh, yeah, that thing.
Okay. I actually ask him about 20 minutes before the show's about to start what we're talking about.
Yeah, what are we talking about here?
It's the level of preparation we go through every week.
Schwing. Now, those of you that have companies that have those mountains of archival, like you have 5 or 6 years worth of all your documents in these boxes, it's a very good idea, and you probably save you a lot of money in storage, especially as you move forward, to get all that stuff scanned in. The question becomes, can you do this yourself?
Right.
No.
Yeah. We actually have a business client that did that.
Yeah.
Themselves. I think they're still working on it
and that's
5 years later.
That's what's going to happen. Look at it the same way you do your home CD collection. Everybody out there that's gotten every CD they own into their iPod or into their iTunes, into their computer, raise your hand.
Nobody.
You've got every CD.
Every single one.
Everyone.
I'm going to have to slap you because I know you're lying.
No, I'm actually
not.
Do you have like 3 CDs total?
I was going to say it's 12.
Yeah, I have 15, but you know, it's my favorite 15.
But that's almost the same correlation for a business that wants to get all that old stuff scanned in. It's a manual process. On top of that, it's much more than just scanning this stuff and all of a sudden it's in your computer.
Mm.
You're a freak of nature.
I know. It's AR. That's the problem.
Is that what it is?
Oh,
okay.
Completely.
What's an iPod?
I know. Yeah. No. Well, that would be how I listen to music. But.
Yes. So it's the same thing. But imagine if you had absolutely no structure for your music, right? So
yeah.
There was no correlation of albums and songs. Just like every song you scanned in was just a song in this big old folder, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sure, you could get to it, but it wouldn't be very efficient.
It's a complete pain even when you do have them all input, because
yes.
Loading an iPod, you just have the same music all the time because it's too daunting to go through every album. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So you've got that same structural problem if you're going to be scanning in all of the stuff that's sitting in those boxes. You have to have a good way to organize of that. So there was a great quote on the internet, and I stole it from my column.
Nice.
Don't think technology is going to make you organized.
That's for sure.
Right? If you don't have good organization, and then you go, I'm going to buy this technology to get me some organization, you're probably going to fail.
You're done. Yeah.
Yeah. You need the organization, the structure, at least the plan, ahead of the technology. The technology will help you execute that. But it's not going to create the structure for you.
Very true.
Unless you're going to hire like a consultant or somebody to come in and go, okay, you're a mess.
Yeah.
Let's go. like those reality shows, right, where you see that.
The cleaning, yeah, whatever. Oh.
So, all right. So we're going to talk more about the less paper office, not the paperless office, the less paper office. Like I talked about earlier, those of you that travel, that have two different homes, or that have a volume of mail that you'd like to really manage, here's a concept. What if you were to keep all of that paper from ever entering your home or your business in the first place? Coming up after the break, we're actually going to explain to you how you can actually do that. There's a company out there that has a service that would literally remove most of that stuff coming in your mailbox and turn it all digital.
I'd have so much more time on the weekends.
Wouldn't that be cool? Well, stay tuned for that. Lots more to go. Join us online again, datadoctors.com/radio, to see all of today's links. 602-277-5827 if you want to call us. And welcome back to the Computer Corner. It's the Data Doctors in the house talking technology as we always do.
I'm not going to lie, your music has gotten so much better since
that's
the
all Pete. That's all Pete.
That's the man.
High five right here.
Air five?
through the glass soundproof window.
He's leaving you hanging.
Oh, he's saying cut your hair. That is
that hurts.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
That hurts right here. I'm grabbing my chest.
We're talking about the less paper office because the paperless office, of course, is a urban legend.
Right.
And as before we went to break, I told you that there's an interesting service out there now that will allow you to, in the words of Ron, who's about to join us, just keep the paper from ever entering your house or your business in the first place, which, I mean, you start to think about that when...
I love it. Yeah. How?
Those of you that have high-definition channels, you may have noticed there's a Mojo channel that's got a lot of cool reality shows. One of them was Startup Junkies. That's how I learned about this particular company. Mm-hmm. And joining us on the, what are we going to call this hotline? The Less Paper Hotline.
There you go.
Is Ron Wiener, the CEO and Postmaster General at Earth Class Mail. Ron, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
You obviously have come up with a very interesting solution to a problem that I mean, lots of people have problems with the physical mail for just multitudes of reasons. The reason I wanted to talk about your product today was just for one little tiny part of what you guys do, which is help people that do want to achieve this less paper office, if you will, get their mail electronically, if you will. So explain exactly how does that work with your service.
Sure. Well, it works a little differently whether it's a home or a business, but let's take, for example, a home situation. Let's say you're a snowbird or you're an expat or you've got multiple homes. You've got a reason to have a remote address. So most people get a P.O. box. In fact, there are 16 million households in America that use a P.O. box. That's just from the post office and all kinds of other alternatives. The problem with all those alternatives is you have to be near that P.O. box or executive suite or something to go over and get your mail every day. So you're still driving there. You're still picking up paper. What we've devised is a way to eliminate all of that. We've set up 20 addresses in the U.S. where customers can sign up and have their mail sent to us. It works just like a P.O. box. You contact everyone who sends you mail and you say, I've changed my address, just like when you move, except this will be the last time you ever have to change it for the rest of your life. So just like when you when you move now, you don't have to change your email address. You don't have to change your website. You
right.
don't have to change your cell phone number anymore. Think of this as a permanent address for the rest of your life. And now, when mail comes to us, what we do is we design this high-speed equipment that images the outside of the envelope, full color, front and back. You're looking at the mail that's in your mailbox, and you simply use the mouse to click on Open and Scan. And that means we're going to open it in a high-security environment and provide you with a secured electronic document, a PDF file, or you can say shred or recycle, forward it to another location, like let's say you want to bunch up all your magazines and everything else that you get because you're living on the road in an RV for a year, and just have it shipped to you whenever you know you're going to be in the next spot. Or if it's at work, you can even say put it on my desk at work or transfer it to somebody else. So that's the basic idea.
So now, suddenly, now, of course, I'm not going to give all the junk mail people this address, right? but the important people and the bill collectors and whatever that I'd want to be able to have electronic access to, so you basically control it in that way. How long does this information stay on your website?
Well, one thing I'll clarify first, if I may, Ken, is that most people, by the time they come to use our service, have already converted everything they possibly could to electronic billing, reading the Wall Street Journal on their Amazon Kindle instead of getting it on paper and so forth. So the folks we're getting as customers, they want to really go paperless. They really want to end all of it. They don't want to have anything accumulated in their mailbox. And some junk mail will continue to come through. I don't like to use the term junk mail, but it's, you know, unwanted mail. Maybe something you actually asked for, but you just don't want this time.
Hey, Ron, it's junk mail.
Okay. Whatever you want to call it. Anyhow, when we receive an envelope, we never open it until you command us to. Once you command us to, and it goes through our very high security process for opening and scanning, then it stays on our system until you pull it off. So once you get it as a PDF file, you can save it to your PC, you can put it in the database, package, whatever you want, and then you can delete it.
So if it's important, then you take control of it, download it to your computer, and then it gets off of your system.
Yeah, you know, as a guy who's been using it myself for 2 years, because I have 5 offices and 2 homes, and I'm living at 37,000 feet most of the time, I can tell you that the vast majority of the time I look at it, I read it, and I might be in my bill-paying website or doing something else to take care of something. Most things I just end up deleting after I've read them, just like you do with your mail in your hand at home. You know, you end up trashing some of it, and some of it you keep and you forward on in an email to somebody else. But, you know, our system is very secure. You actually have to log in to get these files. I want to make that clear that we don't email anything, because email is totally insecure.
Right.
You log on to our site with the security of a bank website, and then from there you can take the documents, do whatever you want.
So let me ask you, that's great for the people that are doing traveling, and what about the businesses out there that have the desire to become, you know, less paper offices? How would I know you have business, small and large business offerings. How does that work?
As a matter of fact, we are now rolling out with a Fortune 100 company that is the first in the world to want to go 100% paperless for all their employees, and that's been a major endeavor. We're working with quite a few government and military branches as well, government agencies. As you can imagine, the massive costs and delays of getting a piece of mail to a soldier in the front lines of Iraq, and we have a lot of guys using our service, and we're trying to get the DOD to adopt it for the same reasons. You add up all that cost of pushing paper. First, you got to run the mail room, you got to sort it out, and then you're going to pay somebody to haul away the trash, and more than half of the mail that they sort out and deliver inside of a corporate enterprise ends up being tossed away unopened.
Yeah.
So you spend all that money. Then on the open documents, the statistics are typically costs about $20 to $50 per document in a corporation, $90 in a government agency for all the touches that are going to happen on that document until the end of its life cycle, when it gets scanned, before it goes into the storage facility, before it gets shredded for Sarbanes-Oxley at the end. Our whole philosophy is keep that mail away from the enterprise. Go as far upstream as you can. That is, we pick it up at the post office and services that company, and we take it to our facility where we process everything in our usual Earth Class Mail way. Then the employees very rarely will say, put something on my desk, I need it in physical form. Typically, they set up a lot of their stuff on autopilot, so it's automatically scanned and inserted directly into the enterprise content management system or accounting system or whatever that they're using to process their workflow. But all the employee mail can now be safely opened without violating attorney-client privilege or HIPAA or Sarbanes or any other regulations, because it's the employee who's addressed on the envelope that's making the decision whether it's going to be opened and scanned, or it's going to be shredded, or it's going to be delivered to their desk so they can open it. Even for legal departments, we let them have the stuff come up to their department so that a paralegal can scan it into the same system and get all the benefits of the system but not violate attorney-client privilege.
Okay, so now the really important question,
mm-hmm.
especially for most of my listeners that are listening out there, they're going, great, but I don't have that many employees. But mm-hmm. I'm interested in this for my own personal use. What kind of pricing are we talking about? What's the range?
You know, we price it very much like cell phones on the consumer side. Consumers and small businesses want predictability. And so our plans start as low as $9.95 a month. They go up to, I believe, $69.95 a month for small businesses that have a lot more volume, and they go a la carte after that. We also have corporate pricing plans for small to medium-sized businesses. Enterprise customers are a whole different scheme. So it depends on how much mail you expect to get. So for $9.95 a month, you're going to get so many pieces of mail and so many pages of scanning and recycling and shredding and all that for free. The only thing additional that you would pay for would be if you use any shipping, if you want us to DHL some of your stuff to you elsewhere, then you'd pay for that. But most of our customers are typically in the $20 a month bracket as an average.
Should be able to handle it. Okay, so Obviously, anybody that's interested in learning more, we've got a link on our website. Earth Class Mail is the name of the company. That, of course, is the URL, cleverly enough.
Yeah.
And obviously, Ron, you've done your homework. You got all the numbers to tell you now. So let's talk about the whole having cameras follow you around in your company for, I mean, for those people that are fans of the Startup Junkies, when did they actually stop filming with you?
They started filming, I believe it was around April when we were at a venture conference. And then they stopped filming, I believe it was mid-January of this year.
Okay, so anybody seeing episodes today, a lot's happened since since that whatever they're showing on the current episodes.
Oh, yeah. You know, it truly is reality TV in the sense that we couldn't predict what was going to happen. We didn't even film the last episode until the first episode was already on the air. So, because they can compress all this down to 8 weekly half-hour episodes, as you know, on Mojo. And by the way, the show's going to be in repeat for at least a year because it's going to take at least that long to film the next company. So it's still available on there. I think they're on episode 2 again right now. Anyhow, since then, of course, we've gone through more funding rounds. I think in the last episode we talked about how they had us in Barcelona at Post Expo in Microsoft's booth. That's our partner on dealing with taking our platform to the national level, going through national post offices in other countries where they're looking to deploy our platform for all of their citizens and businesses and government agencies. And as the show ended, we were just talking to the first, I think, 18 post offices. And now those talks have converted into 6 of them asking us to start initiating pilots in their countries.
You're not kidding about being a postmaster general then.
I like to say Postmaster General of the world because
yeah.
Their customers are in 130 countries already.
Okay, now, Ron, here's the deal. When you become bigger than Google, okay, you remember, I took the time to have you on my show, okay?
I'm sending you a stock certificate as we speak.
Woo! Here we go.
All right.
Ron Weider, thank you so much for joining us, CEO and Postmaster General of Earth Class Mail. You want to go paperless or less paper? Go check out this company's offerings. Got some interesting opportunities. Ron, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And
thank you.
We'll see you down the road. We'll check in on you. Down the road, speaking of down the road, it's time to check with John Dormy. John, what's going on the road? And welcome back to the Computer Corner. A couple of lines open if you have a question, 602-277-5827. We're talking about the less paper office, not the paperless office. It's for most of us.
Impossible.
Ain't going to happen.
Yep.
But with more and more services like Earth Class Mail, we just talked about, you never know.
True.
It could be.
Help you get there, that's for sure.
Now, there is an electronic paper technology that's out there that's got some interesting possibilities. So you wouldn't throw it away, but it's still got the touch and feel of paper. So we'll kind of see what's going on there. All right. Remember I said users helping users. I love that when it happens. David's joining us now to let everybody know what he does to manage some of the paper in his world. David?
How's it going?
Good. Thanks for holding, and share with us your experience of electronic versus paper.
Well, I've decided that anything that I can view online, I don't save it anymore. Like if I get a bank statement or a statement from a credit card or a mortgage company, if I can view that document online on their website, I don't save that document anymore. I'm shredding my file cabinet now. I'm shredding papers out of my file cabinet as we speak.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Now, when I talked to you off the air, you were saying, "Well, how's this thing work with the mail?" Did you understand what Ron was explaining?
Yeah, and the only thing that was going to my mind was, how much is this thing going to cost?
Well, again, you can control that based on who you give the address to.
Right.
So if you just, the junk mail part's the part I think everybody'd be concerned about because
exactly. You
don't get to control that. So, because it's a physical address that's, or it's an address that you would have to give out. It's kind of like an email address. You know how you have the one that everybody spams and then the one
Correct.
That you hold really, really private.
Right.
You only give it to certain people. So that, to me, for a consumer, for the average consumer that would want to use this.
I have another question about, I have a Western Digital external drive, USB drive.
Yes, sir.
And it uses the Retrospect software.
Yes.
I haven't ran this in over a year.
Woohoo!
Yeah. It's sitting in front of me right now.
You know, guys like us that recover frantic data for a living, We love hearing these stories.
I bought it a year ago. I've used it once. It's in front of me right now. It looks like a brick.
Yes.
Okay. And I'm thinking, okay, so when I run it, is it only going to back up everything I didn't save a year ago?
That is up to
everything?
That is up to how you configure the software.
Okay.
So you can tell it to do what's called incremental backups, which means whatever there are little flags on files that it can flip to know that it backed up the file. And then if you open the file, that flag gets unchecked. So that's how it knows the files that you have worked with since the last backup. So
do an incremental backup.
Well, no. That's one way you can set it up to do incremental. Now, the thing that most people forget about or don't even know about when it comes to a backup system, you need to start with the restore process and work backwards. Okay?
Okay.
So, because that'll tell you what kind of backup system you want. So if you do incremental backups, there's a possibility that if you have a problem, you're going to have to do a restore in order to get all the stuff that you want because you got all this incremental data.
Okay?
So you could do an image-based backup, which makes an exact copy of everything, right? Which then means instead of having to reload Windows and doing everything else, you could restore that image back to a new hard drive if it were to, you know, crash.
Right.
So that's another way to look at it. Now, the problem with that is you only have one copy when you do an image backup. So you got to really balance out all of those things. Backup has gotten so complicated anymore. I mean, it almost requires that you have somebody that really knows what's going on. And what did any of the, I mean, Western Digital, these people that sell these backup systems, they're doing nothing to teach people about the restore process. So
yeah,
they're like, hey,
yeah,
go ahead, here you go, because they know you're going to buy it and you're not going to use it.
Right.
You know, it's like
the rebate world,
right? The concept behind rebates is, you know, only a small percentage of people are going to actually send them in, so let's do it. So that's unfortunately what happens is people buy this thing going, yeah, it's on my desk, so I must be safe.
So I got to set up a restore point first.
No, what you need to think about how you want to go about restoring, right? I mean, the whole point.
Data, right.
Right, and that's going to tell you how to back up.
Okay.
Right?
Well, I want to restore from data that's on the external drive.
Well, yeah, that's a given.
Okay.
But do you want to have to restore 6 or 7 increments? Do you want to restore all at once? Do you want to see if you're doing incremental backups, then you're going to have to do your hard drive crashes. You have to install a new hard drive. Somebody has to reload Windows from scratch. Somebody has to do all the updates and get everything going. Somebody then has to reload your backup program. Then you can start restoring. Oh, and by the way, you have to reinstall all your programs, right?
But don't do the incremental.
Well, that's the only way that that's going to work.
Okay.
So, again, if you're okay with that, then do the incremental. If you want to make it easier for yourself, then do the image. Or there's a combination of the two that you can do, which would also be a good thing to do. You know what? You held for so long. I'm going to give you some one-on-one attention during this break.
Some love.
Can you believe we blew through an hour already? One more hour of computer talk to go here on the Computer Corner. When we come back, we have our Geek Speak of the Week, more about the Less Paper Office, and, of course, your calls and questions at 602-277-5827. Stay tuned for more.
You touch a key, and it just completely hard freezes the system.
Nice!
I'm hijacked.
Ding, 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 we got a winner!
It only does this when it starts up.
Never turn the computer off, then.
You can trust no one, especially people that you think you can trust. Except for us.
Right.
You can trust us.
We want others to learn from your pain.
Let me tell you what my dilemma is.
Let's do that.
Does your computer bite? Has your hard drive gone floppy? It's time to call the Computer Corner on News Talk 92.3. KTAR. Now in the Computer Corner, here are the Data Doctors.
And welcome to our number duh of the Computer Corner. Taylor, you didn't know. Duh, is it our number duh? Yeah. You didn't know I was bilingual, huh?
You're not really bilingual.
You're right. 602-277-5827. The Data Doctors du jour, Ken Colburn, Brian Ellison, and Taylor Colburn, Data Doctor in training. And we have Misha on the phones, and we need to get her in here. And well, first of all, let's fill up the phone line. 602-277-5827. You got a question, you got open lines. Call Misha, get in the queue. We'll see if we can't get you on. We're going to go to the Geek Speak of the Week in a second here, Pete, but Glenn's been holding for a while, and earlier I said, no such thing as a paperless office. And I spoke too soon. Au contraire, says Glenn. Glenn says, I live paperless.
I love that. Let's hear it.
Glenn, tell me about your... Now, I'm assuming, I don't know if you heard the opening of the show, one of the reasons why we said it's impossible to have a paperless office. Did you hear that part?
Yes, sir. And I have a virtual office, so the bathrooms are virtual, too.
Oh, okay. I don't even want to know what kind of carpet or whatever.
Yes.
So you are, you say you're a virtual office, so you're like a telecommuter?
A prosecutor? What'd you say?
A telecommuter?
Yeah.
You totally. Do? You work from home?
No. I'm equipped with laptops and with wideband and GPS, so, you know.
You're out and about. I'm trying to understand. Are you part of a big office that's paperless, or are you part of a company that's basically kind of gone to this distributed office and nobody actually physically goes to an office?
Correct. Everything gets thrown up. We're an office. A large office that administration distributes the work through electronic.
Got it.
And the work comes in request the same way.
And so if somebody mails you something, how do you get that?
It comes through via email, the work request. We have a website that they go on to that's secured.
Yeah, I'm talking about your bills and all that stuff for your particular part of the business. I mean, it's not, you're talking about your major interaction with your company is paperless, but you're not totally paperless.
Well, yeah, paying the bills, but right. As far as doing the process of the work
right.
request and the completion and the return.
Sure. And that, I mean, that's pretty common anymore for a company to have. So you never, ever print anything out?
No, even the folks that we have a few companies that are still old-fashioned that like to use the fax machine.
There you go.
Yeah, that's a dinosaur. That the computers pick up and they download the information, so there's no paper for that either.
Right. Now, that's pretty easy to do, and that's what we talked about. There's some things you can do as an individual or as a small business. One of the things, you can stop using your copier and start using your scanner, right? Because once you scan it in, then instead of faxing it, you can email it, and you've got a much better record. It's electronic. The person receiving it can do more with it as opposed to that one time. And because it's digital, typically there's no degradation. Every time you fax something, that generation, the next generation, it's an analog process. It gets worse and worse. Just look at some of the legal documents that have been floating around back and forth from the early days. So the CD. So, okay. Well, again, Glenn, thanks for calling. I at the end of the day, most companies, I think, from the standpoint of the core of what they do, they've pretty much gone electronic. I know, mm-hmm. people aren't using notepads and things like that to conduct business.
Right.
But I think dimes to donuts, if I really examine the daily practices of Glenn and some of that, there's probably plenty of paper still circulating and floating, and there's stuff getting printed out and all of that stuff. So, all right, 602-277-5827 if you've got either a question, contribution, so on and so forth. But before we go back to the phones, we're going to do our Geek Speak of the Week. It's in a very, very, very appropriate Geek Speak. That's been around a while. Again, this is this is our attempt to try to teach you some term that you may not have heard about or understood, or maybe you heard it and you didn't know what it meant.
Mm-hmm.
This certainly. Week's Geek Speak of the Week is OCR.
That's not OCD, is it?
OCR.
Oh, okay.
This
OCR.
Is the first time I actually knew what it meant.
You knew what it had.
I did.
Well, I mean, it's not like this is anything new. OCR stands for Optical Character Recognition, and that's mm-hmm. the technology that you usually have when you buy a scanner. You get a piece of software. And when you decide you want to scan something, you have to decide one of two ways. Do I want to scan this as an image, which means I'm going to take a picture of it like a copier does, or do I want to use my OCR software to try to take whatever this is, scan it, and try to find all the text on the page and then drop it into like a Word document.
Mm-hmm.
So now I can edit this thing, right?
You bet.
Which sounds really cool, doesn't it?
Yeah, and there's some OCR programs out there will actually allow you to replace images or select only the text to edit and keep the document in the same form, so then when you go to print or distribute it, you can put the image back there.
It's definitely come a long way.
It
so
has.
Those of you that bought scanners 10 years ago, tried the OCR software that came with the scanner and said, that is a bunch of buoy. I agree with you.
I like that. That's
buoy
a new term.
From, yeah. It was written by Muyucks.
Muyucks, yes.
Muyucks, yes.
I thought it was a buoy and meant throw it out in the ocean. And
okay, buoy. Yeah, that works.
You guys are all funny.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry.
Today's OCR software is significantly better, but And the thing is, the reason why scanning it as a text document as opposed to an image makes sense. When you scan a single document as an image, it ends up creating generally what's called a TIFF file, T-I-F-F. And it's enormous.
Exactly.
I mean, it is. I mean, one file can be 2 or 3 megabytes, right?
Oh, yeah. You bet.
Versus a text file, which is, you know.
Don't you love when people, you know, email those to you?
Yeah.
4 megs.
Stop. So those are things to look at. And again, if you have a scanner, take a look at using it more for than just, oh, I have a picture I want to scan in. It's your fax machine today, folks. You scan it in and then email it. Okay? There.
Yeah. It's also a way to convert your old photos. We were talking about that earlier. Photos and slides, negatives.
If you don't have a huge amount of documentation to scan in, you can actually do a scan of as an image. You could take that, those two filing cabinets you have, and scan all that stuff in and then shred it, and then again make sure you have a good backup system.
Exactly.
Because you just got rid of your old school backup system if you do that. But again, you can clear up a lot of space by doing those kinds of things. So
certainly.
Back to the phones here, and let's talk to, or at least let's let Alan tease the question.
All right.
Alan, what's on your mind today?
Well, occasionally my computer will slow down terribly, and it'll get to the point where I can't get anything to move at all, and mainly it's because I got too many processes working. And I go to the task manager, and the main culprit seems occasionally when I'm on AOL instant messaging, that seems to be the main culprit at that time.
Yeah, that AOL software is really working well.
So I'll take that out of there. I mean, I'll remove it. Then it works for a while. But I have 50 to 60 processes going on all the time, which is too many, I think. But I don't know what to take out because I don't know what all these things are.
Exactly.
There's always the catch.
And being an amateur, you know, I'm scared to take something out. I'm afraid the whole thing's going to go green on me or something.
Good for you. Now, this is something that 90% of the people, if they actually check the number of processes running, probably in the same boat. So hang tight because that's a great question. And we have a great answer for you and everybody else that's having that problem. So stay tuned for that. But for now, let's check to see what kind of how many processes are running out there on the freeways.
Nice.
John Dormy, take it away. Welcome back to the Computer Corner. The data doctors are in the house, as we are every Saturday afternoon, trying to learn you something about your technology. It happens. This week we're talking about the less paper office. I know a lot of people claim to be paperless, but it usually takes about 5 or 6 minutes for us to find lots of paper in their life that they, oh yeah, yeah, okay, yeah.
No, you're not.
Forget, I mean, that's semantics. Less paper is good.
True.
Join us online, datadoctors.com/radio, to learn more about how to adopt some of these less paper techniques. It might save you money, time, and save a few trees.
There you go.
Look at me. I sound like a tree hugger, huh?
You do.
You are a tree hugger.
I'm not.
That's true.
I can't.
I do drive.
I do have hemp sandals. I have one pair. Before we went
but
to break,
they're comfortable.
Yes, they are.
There you go.
I was talking to Alan. Alan did a Control-Alt-Delete on his Windows machine. You have Windows XP?
Yes.
And is it a laptop or desktop?
Desktop.
Okay. You do a Control-Alt-Delete, and either the task manager will come up or a little screen that says, click here for your task manager will come up. Either way, bottom left-hand corner tells you how many processors are running.
Yep.
And if you listen to the data doctors, they tell you, you know, 35 to 40 is a pretty good number. Anything over that, you probably want to start looking. And you said you're at about 60.
It runs between 50 and 60 usually.
Now, you said things get really, really super slow, right?
Well, at times it literally freezes up where I can't do anything.
Right, so.
And as a side question, when that happens, how do I shut the thing down when I can't do anything with it?
All right, we'll answer that as well. But
okay.
The additional thing, since you're now using the task manager as your engine light, if you will, the tab across the top that says performance.
Yep.
If you go to that when your machine is very lethargic, is your processor usage very, very high, or do you?
At times, it almost flatlines on 100.
Okay, so that clearly means you have stuff running in the computer that's got Windows so caught up trying to do whatever, and a lot of times that's like spyware and adware and some of the hidden stuff and Trojans and all that stuff. The question you had of, well, how do I know how to remove, you know, which ones I can remove? So unless you're in the business and can identify things quickly, you have to learn step by step, process by process. And the only way you can do it yourself is to take each process, and go do a Google search to figure out what that process is associated with.
Okay.
And typically, if it's a rogue program or for something you definitely want to get out of there, you'll see all kinds of references to spyware and adware and those kinds of things. Now, word of caution. These companies have figured out that people are doing this. And so the companies that say you have a bad program will say, and here's the program you buy to get rid of it.
Yeah.
Okay? So any site that is giving you information about a process, the tip is, unless you can confirm that exact same thing on multiple sites, don't buy anything that they're trying to sell you to get rid of it. Just take the information with a grain of salt and say, okay, I got to figure out what this is and get this thing out of here. You've identified you got some bad stuff. Mm-hmm. Bottom line is you definitely need to get rid of about, almost 20 processes, if not more.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to go through and figure out what each one of those are. Now, AOL, one of the reasons why I'm not a big fan, is the software has always been just obtrusive.
Yes.
AOL software will work fine in a laboratory where there's nothing else installed on the computer. After that, in the real world, see, the problem is it's trying to control things that other parts of Windows is trying to control, and they get into this fight, and you'll get some of that. So this processor utilization issue that you've identified,
yes.
If you go to one of the processes that you know is AOL and you say end process,
mm-hmm.
Okay, it's just a temporary thing. But if your CPU usage,
that's a mouthful,
three
yeah.
times, right?
Exactly.
If it if it instantly drops, guess what? You found the culprit that's causing the CPU to be constantly tortured.
Yeah, well, I found that culprit. I said it's AOL instant messaging is what's causing the big problems. I just take it off there most of the time. So.
Right. So, but that's essentially you got to do that with all 60 processes to figure out which ones have to go.
Right.
Now, the way you can get rid of them is go to the add remove programs in the control panel and uninstall it. Go look at the program list. If it's a program you want to keep, you just don't want it to start up every time, just automatically load whenever Windows starts, you need to look in like the preferences or the settings for that program to say where, like QuickTime wants to start and the Adobe Speedup program wants to start and all this stuff wants to start because, they're thinking, well, you really need me.
Right.
So everybody takes that position whenever you install things. So here's the tip on how to keep this thing down. One, once you get this thing under control, check the number of processes once a month. That way you're catching it when it starts to creep up instead of when it gets to 60, right?
Yeah.
And pay very close attention when you're installing things. That next thing that everybody does?
Yeah.
In there, they're saying, would you like me to put you the start up? And if you don't pay attention, guess what? Burnt. Next thing
it's running.
You got 60.
It's easy to say yes to.
Yeah, exactly. So pay attention.
Yeah.
We just solved this problem before we came here.
All right, thanks for calling in, Alan.
Okay, you didn't answer my side question.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
When it does freeze up and I can't get in the task manager and I can't take it out of there and I'm 100% flatline, how do I shut this thing down?
All right, you know what? That's so important that unfortunately we don't have time. So I'm going to put you on hold. And we're going to continue this conversation on the other side of the break here. It's the Computer Corner, and the Data Doctors are here. We're going to help Alan with everything he could possibly think of before the end of the show. And if your teen tends to turn their iPod up too loud.
Yeah.
What?
Exactly. Researchers are urging parents to talk to their kids because they know, based on a most recent survey, the kids know it's going to damage their ears or has the possibility, but of course...
They don't care.
They don't what?
They don't care.
They don't care.
It's everyone who's age of 18.
Right, well, you're invincible at 14 and 15 and 16, and nothing's ever going to hurt you and all of that.
Well, there's been complaints placed about some of the MP3 players about having too... what is that? The decibels were actually too loud or louder than should be.
90 decibels is where you start to get.
Yeah.
But see, the problem is 90 is where the damage starts, but you don't feel pain until you get up into the
hundreds,
like 120, 140 decibel, right? So that, it's not hurting me, so it's okay.
You know, though, I was just reading an article that said people need to start their hearing testing in their 30s now.
What? God.
Because, 30%...
That never gets old.
No, it doesn't.
30% of people actually listen to iPods, whatever,
Well, yeah,
loud.
And if you have earbuds, it's worse than if you have over-the-ears.
Yeah.
Now, Taylor's totally terrific tip
That makes it sound lame.
Okay. All right.
Well.
Okay. Okay. How about this? Taylor's finally going to come to the show with something for our audience. How's
yeah.
that?
Yeah. Other than a vitamin, water, and
okay,
some sushi.
Tell the parents out there what they can do to help curtail this with their child's iPod.
Well, basically, if your child's a butthead, then you can just steal their iPod, go into the settings, and change this thing called the volume limit.
Volume limit.
Right. You just take it and let it. It's got that little bar or whatever, and you can scroll to say this is as loud as they can have their iPod.
Right. That's the max. Like a governor on a car.
But then
right.
it's like it's all sneaky about it, and it's like changes the proportions of the actual volume, so they think they're listening to it. At
right.
The
they're
same
still
sound.
Going maximum. Right.
Right. They're still like scrolling all the way through.
Oh, it's brilliant. I play it at 11. Everyone else has 10. Oh,
so
I
the
have
visual
another.
Of the volume doesn't change for the user.
No.
It still says the same parameter.
Right.
Or
right.
So
okay.
if your kids
nice.
Use earbuds. You want to go to about 60%.
Mm-hmm.
If they have over the ear, then you can go about 70. Okay, so
and
that's
you're safe. Okay.
So now, most of the kids know about this, right?
Right.
So obviously, depending upon what your relationship is, Taylor had a couple other sneaky ideas. Obviously, the best thing is to have a frank conversation about
right.
you're really going to want to be able to hear down the road, and so if you can have that open discussion and then agree to put the limiter on, great. If not, you're saying what?
Go in there, change the setting, and you can put a password on it. So if they try to change it, it
brilliant.
Goes, password, and they're like, ah.
What?
See, I like that.
Sneak. Yeah. All right. Alan's been holding long enough. Thank you, Taylor.
Welcome.
I'm tearing up. It's so beautiful. Alan, thanks for holding. You,
no problem.
You had a great question. We talked about the task manager. We talked about the number of running processes. We talked about the 2.5 weeks that you're going to spend trying to figure out what the 60 processes are. Now,
right.
now we're going to try to give you some tips on what to and what not to do when the thing is locked up and doesn't want to play.
Okay.
Right? You're in the task manager. So the fact that you got it to the task manager says it did respond.
Yeah.
So a lot of times what looks like a lockup is actually just the computer is going to be so bound up for a while, it's not going to, but you're in a hurry, I want to go, I want to go, I want to go.
But what if I can't get to the task manager? If it locks up and I'm not on there and I'm trying to get in there to get rid of the stuff and I'm not in there.
Yeah, now if nothing responds
yes.
to whatever you're doing,
yeah.
it's already gone to sleep.
Okay.
So anything you do from there, it's not really going to matter if it's just flat not responding.
Okay.
So you have no choice but to, and it depends, if it's one of the newer machines, you got to press and hold the power
yeah.
button
yeah.
for five
yeah.
seconds
yeah. Yeah.
and
I've
shut that
it.
Down. So let me tell you what happens when you have an abnormal end to a Windows shutdown.
Okay.
One of the reasons why when you tell Windows to shut down it takes so long is that it's doing housekeeping.
Yep.
Okay? So all of the temporary files and all the stuff that it would normally get rid of from a proper shutdown, it didn't get rid of. So if it's happening a lot, what will end up happening is you're going to fill your hard drive up with a lot of garbage.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's happening a lot, once you get everything under control, make sure and run your disk cleanup utility,
okay.
which will go in and get rid of all the temp files and things that are likely to have built
yeah,
up.
Yeah, I do that regularly.
So, but I mean, that's really all you can do because it's dead man walking at that point, right? I mean, it's already done. It's been preordained. You have
okay.
no choice, right?
Okay.
Okay?
Yep.
Hey, thanks for holding on. Thanks for those great questions.
I appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Appreciate you calling in. That's it's a huge part of the show is when people call in because that situation
happens to everyone.
Unless you're in the business, and even if you are, you're probably not even, taking care of your own stuff as well as you're taking care of your customer stuff. Spyware is such an overbearing thing, and it's a huge problem, and just being on the internet. It's amazing. We were just visiting with a friend this morning on the way to the radio show.
We were, and I tried to mention, but you cut me off.
Right, but we don't mention names. Hey, you had your one segment. And it was... as soon as we open a browser or something, we can tell.
Right.
This thing's got all kinds of stuff in it. And it's always the same thing. Well, I haven't put anything in there. And you look at the desktop.
The toolbars.
And it's just loaded with icons, right? It's
like, I just downloaded like 5 games.
Or a game here. Now, so folks, what you need to understand is these free programs that are out there, some of them are great. Most of them these days, they're doing it for free to try to entice you to install it because...
Yeah.
There's another part of the story that they know you're not going to pay attention. You're going to click on next, next, next.
Yeah.
And it's going to say, would you like me to put this web search? We're going to put this web search toolbar into your browser and whatever. And you're like, whatever.
We as a society don't read.
You think?
Yeah, exactly. It's horrible.
Yeah. Well, and they make it virtually impossible for you unless you're going to read every word and you're an attorney.
Right, that is
the,
true.
The EULA, the E-U-L-A, the End User License Agreement. But if you do pay attention, usually there's an option to do a custom install as opposed to the recommended. Start using the custom, because what'll happen is you'll get to a screen where it actually shows you what it's going to install.
True.
And it's a better opportunity to say, nope, take the check mark off of that. Nope, don't want that one. Or, you know what? These people are trying to pull a fast one on me. I'm not going to install anything from these people. And that's how they do it. So screensavers, smiley faces, these games, anything that looks like a cool weather program, there's an agenda behind these things. It's not that these guys are benevolent and they spent however many hours writing this program just because they want the world to have. Now, there are guys like that. And you'll find a lot of those links on our website. If you go to the free help center at datadoctors.com, look really, really, really closely at the little tiny letters at the top. You'll see one entry that says approved software. There's a list of programs that we highly recommend and a whole much longer list of stuff we recommend you stay away from.
Right.
So take a look at those things. But buyer beware, or non-buyer beware. Free downloader beware. And again, if you have youngsters in your house, you're in the worst situation possible because they're not afraid of anything.
It's like those famous pop-ups that you get. It says, you're infected. Yeah. Please buy this software to clean it up.
Uh-huh. Smit fraud.
Yes.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Absolutely. So you got to be watching that. Let's go back to the phones here. We have Phil, who's got some interesting thing. You get your email on your cell phone. Does that help turn the tide when it comes to the amount of paper you use?
Well, my issue is I won't mention the brand name unless you ask for it. I'm trying to get Gmail via my cell phone.
Well, I mean, is it a smartphone or is it just a regular cell phone?
Well, I can get like Yahoo and and a couple other ones, but I cannot get Gmail.
Well, when you say you can get it, are you talking about, can you surf the web, like just go to any website you want on this phone?
Not anyone.
Okay. So that basically the relationship that your cell phone provider has,
right,
it's with the hardware manufacturer and these other partners, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Which means they have a working financial relationship with these folks, which means they're going to make sure that they don't allow people that don't have a working relationship to get into your phone.
Well, I'm signed up, and I've been signed up for a month, and I'm paying the extra $5 a month, and I bought the different phone so I could have access to.
To Gmail specifically?
Well, when I bought the phone, they said I would be able to, and I've been to the store twice, and I've called the different the customer service people, and the only suggestion, one guy that makes sense is like they're trying to download too much information.
Well, I mean, Gmail is not designed in its current state for you to use on any cell phone. It's designed for web browsers.
Okay.
They do have a mobile version of Gmail, which is great, but you have to have a smartphone that actually has a true browser interface.
Okay, so, well, mine says browser, and it actually shows Gmail as the first option.
Do you know what phone you actually have? Do you know the model?
I can look at it. I'm on it right now. I can look real quick.
What brand is it?
It's a Kyocera, but I don't know the model right off.
Yeah, I'm not. Sam, smartphones are either going to be today's most smartphones. You get a BlackBerry, you get a Trio, or you get an iPhone. Anything other than that, you're. I mean, there. I shouldn't say that. There
no,
are,
there's HTC, right?
Right. But there are others, but those are the big ones, right?
Right.
Those are the big three.
Right.
That if you want to be able to do not just this, but there's a ton of stuff you can do. I've got a BlackBerry. I used to have a Trio. I do envy the iPhone from the standpoint of the usability, but I laugh at all the people when I'm at a conference or when I'm traveling around the country and they can't get it because it has nothing to do with the phone because they're on the AT&T network. My Verizon network, I can get a signal they can't.
Exactly.
So I was like, hey, cool phone. Too bad you can't use it.
Nice.
I mean, but it's just the only way I can get back at them because their phone is so much cooler than mine.
Exactly.
So, I mean, you know, the bottom line is you have to work with your vendor to get this solved.
Okay.
Right? And it could be that you're trying to ask this thing to do more than it can, and if that's the case... Unfortunately, you know, the people that sell this stuff in the stores, they're not necessarily going to know the technical aspects, so you're probably going to have to spend some time. Go look in Google, put the actual phone model you have, and put in running Gmail on and put your phone model number in and see if other people have posted like workarounds or that kind of stuff for you.
Yep.
All right?
The other way to know if you have a phone that actually works like that is how much did you pay for it?
Yeah.
Because the smartphones are typically more expensive. The Q has come way down in price now. The Blackjack, those kinds of phones are $99 usually.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they don't have all the functionality built in, but it will allow you to do some of that.
That new BlackBerry Curve, I think you can get those for $100. But again, you have to be signing up for a new service or whatever. But anyway, take a look at that. Smartphones are phenomenal.
Yes, they make life very nice.
And will also chew up many, many hours of your life. So be careful what you wish for.
Vacation no longer exists.
Yes. Speaking of vacation, let's see if anybody's taking a vacation on the freeways and clogging things up there. John Dormy, what's going on? And welcome back to the Computer Corner. If you missed any part of our show, sometime in the first part of the the early part of the week, we'll have the entire show up in the podcast area after we've cleaned it up and made it restaurant quality. You can certainly learn more about how to go paperless or less paper in your office by joining us online at datadoctors.com/radio. It's a place where you can see all the links that we have. And, of course, while you're there, you can check out our newsletter, including our this week's edition that has all kinds of great tips in it. And the CNN.com video segments that I do on Saturday morning, I've got a link to one of the more popular ones that we had on there, and that was how to set your PC up so that you can. We talked about the mountain of CDs that most people have that never gotten into their computer. A couple of minor changes to the settings of your computer you can make to make it so that you can just start throwing CDs in there. It'll just automatically start to pull them into your music program. So check that out if you will, if you are interested in those kinds of things. If you're not a subscriber to the newsletter, you can certainly look at the last 10, 12 copies. We have them all archived there at the Free Help Center at datadoctors.com. So check it out. If you didn't get in or couldn't get in because the phones were busy or whatever, then you can always, you know, peruse the thing online and go through all of that. So joining us now is Stu, who's got a question about multitasking his computer.
Yes, guys. The only room in my home for a television set is the desktop computer, and I have the Hapage TV system on my computer for the box and software. But lately it seems to have developed a suspicious set of circumstances around it.
Yeah, unfortunately, those television cards... They are great when they work and an absolute nightmare when they start to go.
Well, the suspicious part is if I do the cursor and monitor shut off, sometimes it freezes or the remote won't work proper or something of the like that leads me to believe that it's partnered with something off the internet that snuck its way in.
It's quite possible you're going to want to have the machine looked at. Just forget the TV card for a second. Just make sure that the Windows operating system is functioning properly.
Yeah.
You know,
I do the hard manual button shut off in the front of my desktop computer, everything responds just kosher.
Yeah, I mean, again, the software is what drives that remote. I mean, this is the most convoluted combination of things you could ever do to achieve a simple goal of watching TV. I mean, it is why computer-based television devices have not done real well because of exactly what you're experiencing.
Yeah.
Simple processes become very complicated because there's so many parts involved.
And I'm upgrading to the high-def model of this TV system, too, as soon as I get word from Radio Shack my order came in.
Well, if I can make a suggestion to you or anyone else that's considering doing this, unless you're really into it and really like to play with and want to constantly troubleshoot things, I would suggest that you look at a dual purpose monitor. For instance, I've got one, it's an older monitor, it's just analog video, but it's actually got a TV tuner built into the monitor.
It's
got its own remote control. So now I'm not involving Windows at all, and I can do the picture in picture and I can do all those things. I thought that's the way to go because I'm going to watch TV while I'm at my desk. Not.
Well, the only one I installed this Hapage system. Norton's found a Trojan buried in there somewhere, either, of course, intentionally by the manufacturer or accidentally, you know, the way those things sneak in through the internet all sorts of ways.
Well, I mean, it's anybody's guess as to how that particular Trojan would show up, but take a look at that. We've set lots of clients up with these, and I think people that are really, like, into the stock market or that kind of thing, and they want to watch these TV shows while they're working on dual monitors, I mean, we've seen some pretty elaborate configurations we put together. But understand, the more complexity you have, the more likely you're going to have a problem that's going to require somebody to dig into all of this stuff. And, of course, if the hardware fails or there's a software update that I've seen this happen, you do an update to the software and all of a sudden either it doesn't work the same way or it stops, certain functions stop working and, you know, you get aggravated by that. You just want to change the channel.
Or something like a reboot with backup, you have to totally reboot and restore your system.
So I think the lesson that we're trying to teach everybody here, Stu, is to keep it simple, silly.
Don't need it. Install it, guys.
That's exactly it. Thanks for calling in, Stu.
Bye.
And anybody considering spending a lot of extra money to try to get television on their computer?
Good luck.
You might want to really think about it because it's not something that... for the meek at heart, let's just say.
Yeah.
Taylor, thanks for paying attention for 20% of the show.
What?
Exactly. Brian, thanks for coming in. Misha,
anytime.
Thanks for coming in, doing the screening. Pete, thanks for some great rejoiner music.
Very much
thanks
so.
Thanks to all the callers and listeners that joined us today. Again, if you want to learn more about paperless or less paper technology for your life, check out datadoctors.com/radio. And until next week, it's the Data Doctors reminding you, if it ain't broke, fix it till it is.